Hello, everyone. Thank you for stopping by. This is Life with Innovation. I'm your host, Daniel Vargas. And in today's podcast, we talk about SpaceX's recent Dragon launch. Feel free to follow us for more innovation topics. We upload podcasts every Wednesday. Keep thinking big, and I hope you enjoy the show. This is Life with Innovation. What's up, guys? So, SpaceX, pretty amazing stuff. They just launched Bob and Doug, who are the astronauts that were selected. Of the four, I believe. I think there's four total. But Bob and Doug went up into space in the new Dragon. That's some big news for American astronauts. I mean, this is the first time that we're really shooting astronauts into space from American soil since the Obama administration had shut down the astronaut program. Some big stuff for space travel as a whole. I mean, I don't know if you guys know this, but for a while there, we were catching rides with Russia on their Soyuz rocket. But now, SpaceX is gonna be the one to be shooting astronauts into space, to the ISS, and eventually to the moon and back, and it's gonna be pretty amazing. What's really amazing, actually, is the fact that you could see them. I mean, I don't know if you guys caught that on May 30th around noontime, but to have a camera in there and be able to see their reaction, it looked pretty surprising. I mean, you would think that they'd be squished up against the seats and whatnot or something, but they looked completely fine. Those seats were, they have like suspension in them, and they're quite comfortable. At least they looked comfortable, and I don't know how the new addition to those seats actually felt. I had the pleasure of sitting in one, a mock one, and it was pretty comfortable, but how they are now, I'm not too sure. But they were over here touching the screens and whatnot, so it was pretty amazing. But it looked like one hell of a ride. But let's go through some quick facts on the rocket launch as a whole, right? So the Falcon 9, which is Block 5 right now, that's the current edition. It's Block 5. You can tell it's Block 5 when on the Falcon 9 you notice that there is a black block on the second stage of the rocket. So, actually, I don't think it's the second stage, but it's part of the first stage, the upper part of the first stage. Anyway, it's 177 feet tall. I mean, 177 doesn't sound that large, but if you've ever seen a 17-story building, that is about as tall as it is. Like, that's crazy. That's absolutely amazing. And majority of it is filled with liquid nitrogen and overall just fuel to be able to propel it into space. It did land on "Of Course I Still Love You," which is absolutely amazing. I mean, who comes up with these names? Of course, the mastermind Elon probably came up with it, but I think it's a cute name. Of Course I Still Love You. It's like sending the rocket off and it's coming back and the rocket's asking the question, "Oh, do you still love me?" "Well, of course I still love you. Here, let me catch you." It's caught by a drone ship. So, I mean, that in of itself is pretty awesome. A ship out there is controlling itself to catch the Falcon 9 when it returns, but nonetheless, it's 177 feet. The capsule is pressurized, so I'm not too sure, you know, for you people who aren't too aware of how a capsule is set up for the astronauts, you have a pressurized system and then you have an unpressurized section. So the pressurized section is mainly where the astronauts sit. And obviously it has to be pressurized, so when it gets into space, you know, they could still breathe and there's still air being pumped into the Dragon. And then the trunk is unpressurized, so that is being exposed to the vacuum of space. And that also holds all of the cargo. And this is where it's all attached to the upper part of the trunk. So if you ever looked inside the trunk in one of these in one of these launches, what you'll notice is the trunk looks relatively empty. And the reason behind that is because you're not going to fill the trunk completely. So there's this thing called the octaweb right inside the trunk, on the upper part of the trunk. And they're actually attaching these things to this grid-like formation on the upper part of the trunk. And that's where all the experiments are, that's where all the supplies are for the ISS, and it's actually pretty awesome if you really like the way that it was all designed, right? It kind of has to be attached to something. I mean, they're not going to fill it up all the way and then shoot it up into space. That'd be ridiculous. I mean, we have issues today with coffee just jumbling around in our cars. But imagine this rocket shooting into space, you know, at freaking supersonic speed. And it has to attach to something. So it looks relatively empty. If you ever see a first stage detach from the second stage, and the second stage detach as well, what you'll notice is the trunk actually looks relatively empty. So that's what explains that. There's an octaweb there. And then the claw on the ISS, there's this big arm once it attaches to the ISS. There's this big arm that comes around and reaches inside the trunk and starts just pulling things out. On top of that, the capsule also holds some materials in there as well. So that's also another added benefit to the capsule having more than enough space, which is pretty cool. But if you guys did notice it, I mean, Bob and Doug were sitting in there just, you know, toggling on the new touchpads of the SpaceX Dragon capsule. So, and one other thing to note is that the capsule is relatively autopiloted, which is pretty amazing. If you've ever looked at at older photos of the SpaceX, or not SpaceX, if you looked at older photos of the capsules themselves that go into space, you'll notice that there's a bunch of buttons all over the place. And the thing is, everything had to be manual back then, right? When aerospace engineering was first being deployed and people were going into space, you'll notice that there's like thousands of buttons and switches and all that stuff, and that's because a lot of it had to be controlled manually whenever a maneuver had to be made and whatnot. But what's amazing about technology nowadays is you see this spike in innovation where these, first of all, the Falcon 9, after it hits about 10 seconds, somewhere around there, the Falcon is doing its own thing all by itself. So there's no stopping it after that. And it knows exactly what to do to go into space and actually return when it detaches from the second stage. And then same thing with the Dragon. When it's up in space, I mean, they have the astronauts do have capability to maneuver the Dragon under certain conditions, but the Dragon itself moves all by itself. It does its own thing. It knows where it's at, which is so cool. That's actually absolutely so cool. So when the Dragon reaches the ISS, what happens, which by the way, it reaches it in about 8 hours, about that time, because on Sunday morning, like around 7 a.m., so from 12 o'clock on Saturday to about 7 a.m. on Sunday, that's how long it took for the Dragon from Earth all the way to the ISS. I mean, that's a pretty long time, and you're also catching. You have to catch up to it. That's another thing. Not only are you trying to maneuver yourself, but you're all trying to catch up to the ISS because the ISS is also a moving target. And yeah, the ISS is almost 2 football fields in length, but it's a pretty amazing feat for the Dragon to know where it's at and to know how to get there. So when the nose cone opens up, which is a new thing, by the way, in the first Dragon, Dragon 1, the nose cone would actually blow off, but now it opens up and it exposes the docking system, basically. So there's a soft capture system. So first of all, one thing to note is that the Dragon doesn't just go up to it and just click, you know, just attaches to it in that way. It's not really how it works. It's far more complex than that. So the ISS claw actually grapples the dragon, and kind of when it's close enough, it attaches to it, and it brings the dragon up close to the ISS. And first, what's initiated is the soft capture system. So if you've ever seen a docking system take place, there's like a ring that kind of comes out of the docking system, and it attaches first, and it clicks in, and once it's there, then it pulls the rest of the dragon into the ISS, which then initiates the hard capture system. Now, that in of itself is absolutely amazing, right? I mean, it just makes you think how more complex everything actually is in spaceflight. And what does this really mean for SpaceX, though, right? Like, yeah, we got astronauts back into space, but I mean, it's not something that you can entirely put on the back burner now. Oh yeah, US astronauts can now go into space. I mean, it's a lot more detailed than that. It's a lot more intense than that. I mean, what does that mean moving forward? We'll get into that after our break and after our sponsor. So when we get back, we'll talk about looking forward for SpaceX and what does that mean for US spaceflight. So I'll see you guys in a bit. All right, guys, and we're back. All right, so we were talking about what all of this means for SpaceX and US spaceflight. So for one, the United States no longer has to catch a ride with the Soyuz rocket in Russia, which from what I hear, the ballpark number is like $3 million a seat or something like that. It's really, really crazy number. And so that's all going to be paid for by SpaceX now, or these other companies that come out as well. And that's pretty big news for the United States as a whole. We can start conducting our own research on our own terms, and as well as send astronauts shoot to the moon and SpaceX's ventures to Mars and whatnot. So that's going to be amazing in of itself. But that is really just the tip of the iceberg. I mean, SpaceX. Let's talk about SpaceX and their own agenda, right? So eventually they want to start sending US astronauts to the ISS. That's already amazing stuff. They're going to be making so much money off of that. But after that, what SpaceX actually plans on doing is developing their own BFR, or as they're calling it now, Starship. And this is going to eventually change the way commercial spaceflight is for overall consumers. I mean, what's happening is, or what will eventually be, is Elon Musk wants the Starship to, or BFS, to loop around the moon for a tour, right? That's going to be freaking awesome. I think he's trying to say as low as $5,000 a seat. I mean, that is absolutely insanely cheap, right? Even maybe $35,000? My goodness. Don't quote me on that. But either way, he wants to make it cheap, right? So on top of that, that's like space news, right? That's like his space ventures. But here on Earth, another thing that he wants to do is reshape the way that we view air travel. I mean, the biggest thing that he's trying to accomplish is putting you on a rocket and taking you anywhere you want to go all within 30 minutes. Holy moly. Think about that. Anywhere you want to go. Go to China, 30 minutes. China to here, 30 minutes. All the way to Japan, 30 minutes. And he says that the ride will be similar to, what, like 1 to 2 G's? Something like a roller coaster or something. That's going to be one smooth ride. And
count me in. And once those prices start dropping for things to get cheaper, I'm definitely on board. I'm going to be one of the early adopters of that. So it's going to be much faster travel. There's going to be a bunch of moon tours. And then after all of that, all that said and done, I think they're going to use all of that to fund their Mars missions. That is amazing. And what's cool is he has a goal of by 2100, he wants to have the colonization begin, right? I mean, oh, I'm sorry, 2050, he wants to start that. He wants to fully have like a good number of people out there by 2100. There it goes. That's amazing. I mean, let's see, kids that are born in 2000, if they live to be 100, they will be able to see that. I'm born in the early 90s, so maybe I'll be able to see that. Maybe I'll be able to see the first astronauts to Mars. That's amazing. Wow, amazing stuff happening all within our lifetime, and that's so great. What is next? I mean, what else isn't Elon Musk doing? But for SpaceX, he also wants to do Starlink. Now, this is amazing. This has to do more with his satellite missions, not really BFR or the Dragon anymore, but Starlink. It's going to be basically these satellites surrounding the Earth, to where he's basically going to create a monopoly of internet. Oh my God. fast, high-speed internet anywhere in the world. You can be in the middle of the ocean, middle of the desert. There's a satellite above you. You'll have internet. You'll have all the access possible. I mean, that's pretty cool. That is a future that I look forward to. I think that this is their somewhere around there. Between sixth and ninth mission so far. And each one is sending like 60 satellites into space. I mean, how amazing is that? All within our lifetime. I mean, I think we were born, or we should be very happy to be alive around this time in history. I mean, this history in the making, and I can't wait for what else is to come. I mean, who else isn't, right? All right, guys. Well, that concludes this episode of Life with Innovation. I hope you guys enjoyed. I'll be coming back for some more topics on high tech and a bunch of other stuff. The next episode is going to include the daily innovations within health and lifestyle. And so that's going to be the gym stuff, home equipment, what's really changing there in the home, and all of your daily trinkets and whatnot. So I hope to see you guys there. And until then, just know that life is always better with innovation. See you later, guys.